It's my privilege to introduce him to you and tell you a little something about you, about him. He is the founder of the All Faith Fellowship, which is building rapidly in Tyler, Texas. He and his wife work towards this end. His wife is Margaret Lay, who was made a Swamini in 1969 with the Reverend Adano Lay. She is the Swamini Gaji Yati, how's that pronounced? And they were both initiated into the ancient Indian order of the Saraswati. Adana was given the name of Nityananda Saraswati. He is going to speak this evening on recognizing the Christ consciousness. And I would like to announce at this time that tomorrow at 2 o'clock he will be speaking about techniques in prayer healing. It is a great pleasure to introduce Swami Nityananda.
Thank you, Larry. Before we start, let us just calibrate our minds for a few minutes. Subject has tremendous implications, recognizing the Christ consciousness. Before we can discuss the Christ consciousness and let alone recognize it, we have to be aware of what we're talking about in terms of creation. The Hindu philosophy tells us of a trinity, and the Western philosophy or Christian philosophy also speak of a trinity, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, the Hindus, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. For the Hindus, Krishna is the word they use to represent the descent of the spirit into the flesh. In the West, we use the word Emmanuel, God in man. Scientifically speaking, what are we saying to ourselves? We are all saying that there is a creative intelligence present, inherent in human form. If this is true, then we can try to understand the nature of this creative intelligence and then begin to recognize it around us. If we can understand what it is, how it's functioning, then we can also partake of it. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of words having no real meaning, and then we will be caught up in a personality more than a reality of a cosmic principle. To a Hindu, Krishna is a reality. To a Christian, Christ or Jesus is a reality. Yet, what are they saying to each other? They're both saying that God is in man. But first, We have to understand what God means to each man in order to accept God in man, and let alone recognize it working around us and become identified with it. No man wants pain. It's very simple to realize that. A dying man wants life, and when he gets his life back, it's joy to him. A sick man wants his health back, and when he gets that back, it's joy to him. A poor man, if he gets money, that's joy to him. To a spiritual person trying to realize the truth about himself, it's the constant, ever new joy that passes through him. So in reality, man is reaching out to the creative intelligence in the form of joy, bliss. But this bliss is only realizable to its fullest extent when the creative intelligence would come down and focus through a human being. Now, this is very difficult for man to accept. It's easy for man to accept God as unmanifest, somewhere in some remote region. But not so easy to accept God as this creative principle coming down and participating in human form. When we do accept this, we are going to be liable for idolatry or hero worship. Or are we going to be vulnerable for fanatism? That is, we will go and chop off heads of others to convince them that we have the one true God. It is not that God is not flowing down through man, and let alone God becoming active in man. The problem is, man at his level of comprehension cannot see God functioning directly through man, unless man must be a superman. If you were a cow, you'd want a bigger cow to worship. If you're a dog, you want a super dog to worship. If you're a man, the ideal God-man would be a superman. We have already set up what God is supposed to do for us in the man, not realizing how this principle is working in us. When the very God-man will tell you, I of myself can do nothing, but the Father which is in me doeth everything. This eliminates any type of ego in the realized man. In the Eastern thinking, they do not like to use the word God because it tends to create too much of an image. They rather use the word Absolute, the Supreme Absolute, the Supreme Beingness. And Supreme Beingness can only work in his creation or its creation by channeling down through some form. The form that it will take is the one that we can recognize, and that is human. It would not take the form of a plant, or the form of a rock, or an animal, as the ideal channel for its existence. So it takes man as the ideal channel for its existence. If it takes man as the ideal channel for its existence, then what label or name would you classify this ideal? In the East, they call that label or classification Krishna, but it's not spelled K-R-I-S-H-N-A. It's spelled K, comma, S, comma, N, comma, A, comma. You see an interesting thing. Krishna is not a person. Krishna is a state of awareness. It's a principle where the creative intelligence flows through personalized form. We can say then that Krishna represents cosmic consciousness, or Christ consciousness, or Krishna consciousness, vibratory or vibrating throughout creation. Christ consciousness is that state of awareness that vibrates through vibratory creation. It is that creative intelligence that is flowing through creation. Now, in the East, they refer to this creative intelligence as a personal aspect of God, because man is the only creature that wants to relate to God on a personal level. They will also use the word avatara, meaning descent, a descent of this consciousness into flesh, a descent of the consciousness through matter. When we do that, we are saying to ourselves that the creative intelligence does function through matter. Well, in the Hindu Trinity, we have Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. Brahma is the creator, Vishnu is the preserver, and Shiva the renovator. God the creator is Brahma, which has no shape, no form. Yet the Hindus are so methodical in their thinking, they even went and made some figure to look like Brahma. And there's only one temple dedicated to Brahma. That is a sculpture with four heads, one facing north, one facing south, one east, one west. A four-headed figure looking in four different directions. Yet the word Brahma means head. The head. This is the portion of the human mechanism that creates or centers thought patterns and centers consciousness. Objectively looking at this, minus the symbology, we can say that creative intelligence is pure cosmic awareness, devoid of all forms, omnidirectional. Mean it can look in any direction now. It's not limited in any direction. It's an omnidirectional or all-directional awareness. How does this omnidirectional awareness affect creation? The only way it can affect creation, it must come down to some form. So they say, the next level of this omnidirectional awareness is Vishnu, the preserver. All right, if you create something out of your mind, you take it from some inspirational point of your being, you'll get joy. The greater joy will come now from trying to preserve it or maintain it. If you don't maintain it, you will throw it away. How many of us, when they make something, throw it away immediately? You create something and you look at it, and there's joy. You maintain it, polish it, take care of it, there is more joy because it's using itself, you're using it, it's acting. The greatest joy would come if you smash it all up and remodel it, because you would put a new model into effect. This is consciousness at work. This is the creative principle at work. Now, this creative principle must come down on a human level, no matter how we try. It must work through us as human beings. We have it in us as human beings. It is for us to recognize it. Now, when we start to recognize it, from the Hindu Trinity, we see Vishnu which is the maintaining aspect of this consciousness, sends out saviors or avatars. A savior is someone who tries to maintain a balance, one who lifts up to prevent people from becoming unrighteous. So the word avatar, descent into the spirit, into the flesh, that descent of spirit into the flesh is maintained. So we see like great beings like Rama, men like Gopal or Govinda, men like Buddha, Moses, Elijah, these are all avatars on a long line of maintaining. They are expressions of this personal aspect of the creative intelligence. Right down to Jesus. Jesus was an avatar, and the word used was Emmanuel, God in man. So we don't see any conflict between the Hindu concept and the Christian concept as to what this creative intelligence is doing on a personal level. It is how this creative principle works inside the personal level that's very, very difficult to comprehend. Where does it work in us? How can we recognize it's working in us? Because we have many statements pertaining to it. Since the creative intelligence working through a personal level is called the Christ consciousness or the Krishna consciousness, it is that particular creative force field that is responsible for the behavior of matter. We look at matter and we see it. It follows certain behavioral patterns, yet we are not relating to it as a whole. We are only relating to it as parts. And if we see certain behaviors in one little object, this is what we will target, not fully realizing that consciousness is flowing as a whole. Matter as we see it, according to Einstein, is energy. According to the mystic, it is the lowest expression of pure consciousness. It's the lowest expression of pure consciousness. If you're in doubt, Dr. Baxter, with his experiment on plants, tell you plants think. Have you read of that? Are you familiar with that? Well, if he, on this level, just now breaking through the veils that are acting in matter to make us conscious of a behavior going on, and that there's an intimacy, then until we understand that, we will not understand what the Christ consciousness is working in us. The Christ consciousness is the collective creative principle directing the total behavior of the structure of matter. And the human brain is the only mechanism capable of monitoring it. As long as the human mechanism removes the sense of focus or sense of identity from the five senses or lower mechanism to the higher or intuitive mechanism, then that Christ consciousness will begin to manifest itself. We have to surrender the sensory nature and focus upon the intuitive nature. We are given indications by Jesus when he said, "If I be lifted up, I will draw all men unto me. And if the Son of Man be lifted up," the Son of Man is your sensory nature. If you withdraw from your sensory nature and center it on the intuitive nature, for the first time you will start locking in. to the true behavior pattern of creation around you. This is the Christ consciousness that you're trying to lock into. Because once you lock into it, there is no limitation. Christ consciousness, in order to recognize it now in a human being, is that capacity to crystallize thoughts at will. If when you think certain thoughts and a plant can pick it up and respond, but you are not aware that the plant is picking it up, the lack of your awareness does not normally distort the plant, yet the very thought that you triggered off can distort the behavior of the plant. Either the plant will grow better or it will shrivel up and die. This is proven because you can send love to a plant and send hate to another one, keep them all growing side by side, and before you know it, the one that has love seems to bloom, the one that has hate shrivels up. Now, if we can do this on a conscious level, without even capable of monitoring the vibratory rate on a conscious way, realize if you can generate this ability and monitor it, what is happening? Your consciousness can lock in and trigger for the first time actual movements. You can actually sense these movements, send them out, you can actually feel them and make the plant behave or the object behave in terms of this thought. The Christ consciousness is that creative principle working as a collective whole in all creation. When you identify with it, you can monitor it now by thinking. Otherwise, you'll just have a feedback from your thought waves, and they will, to some degree, affect the objects around you. But when you're fully conscious in terms of identification with the vital life power in your being, then you not only move the plant kingdom, animal kingdom, or mineral kingdom, or human kingdom, but you cause within their very structure now to vibrate and obey the thought patterns set up within themselves, now becoming crystallized by your concentration. The Christ conscious man does not generate desires. Therefore, he feels your desires first, he identifies with your mechanism first, and then brings these desires into crystallization. And as they crystallize, you have an experience now of the Christ consciousness in your life. So think what I'm saying. How do you recognize it in your own life? When a desire begins to crystallize in your life that you might trigger off at some time, not fully conscious of how you're triggering it off, and when it does crystallize, you may assume that some unseen power brought it into manifestation, when in reality it is the Christ intelligence, the collective whole force field that is existing in creation, causing this internal desire to crystallize within you, around you. You are, in a sense, bringing into manifestation your own desires by locking in to the collective whole of the universal creative principle. If you don't lock into it, then your desires take a long time to materialize. Sometimes they don't materialize. Now, a fully realized individual who can sense this whole force field can then cause this consciousness now to precipitate other people's desires immediately. What they do is that they shrink down time for the first time. A man living in the full state of consciousness acting on consciousness, which is Christ consciousness now, one of the levels of creation, when consciousness is acting on consciousness, that individual now has the capacity, by his own intimacy of his being, to shorten the function of time. Now, why does he shorten the function of time? Because it is time that makes it seem impossible for us who are unrealized to bring about any manifestation of a desire at will. If you desire something and you cannot crystallize it at will instantaneously, there is a time factor that is involved. If the thought can crystallize into reality at will, we can see now the Christ intelligence is working through you faster. In the experience of prayer for healing, when you pray to heal someone, and if the healing occurs instantaneously, your own consciousness has locked in to the Christ intelligence, the collective whole force field in the vibratory nature of matter, and cause a shrinking of the time cycle into manifestation. So we say we've had an instantaneous healing. Then you realize it is not you who have done it, but the creative intelligence within you that did it. I of myself can do nothing, but the Father which is within me doeth everything. The sense of ego goes out more and more as we are capable of instantaneously crystallizing the desire action. Yet there's a danger in it too. As soon as we start crystallizing thought patterns instantaneously too often, we are going to develop a craving to exhibit it, because you will think in your mind, there is nothing in this world you cannot do. Right there and then you would be caught up in one of the functions that Jesus mentioned. What a profit a man to gain his whole world and lose his soul. Because right there, this craving urge to demonstrate will become strong. The Christ intelligence in man and in the whole creative force field works primarily for the good of each individual. It works through the individual. It works to help the individual resolve certain thought patterns, certain cravings. Yet at the same time, it may not do a single thing for anybody. The Christ intelligence may not even release or crystallize a desire for no one. If you realize that Master Jesus went to a certain place, and then he came back and he said, with these people, I can do nothing. They had desires, they had wishes and cravings, yet when he tuned in to their own creative structure, their intensified doubt and hardening of their mind as to the reality of the possibility of this force coming through them, they blocked it out. Now there is no experience in Christ consciousness occurring for any human being without we, the individual, setting up the necessary conditions to receive it. We have to set up the necessary conditions to receive it. We have to want it. Alright, let's see if the necessary conditions of wanting are not important. There was a woman who suffered from an issue of blood. She saw the Master walking. Yet she says in her mind, she has to put these conditions in her mind, if I would but touch the hem of his garment, I will be made whole. Now you realize what we're talking about? She says the hem of his garment. That's a piece of material a person is wearing around his body. A little while ago, I'm talking about the structure of creation. This woman may not be a scientist in her mind, not by any training, yet her inward feeling is that since this Christ principle is passing through this physical form, then there would be no limitation to this creative force flowing to her. Her own innate Christ self is recognizing the expanded, magnified Christ self in the man Jesus and is reaching out to set the stage for receptivity. Your Christ self must set the stage for the Christ that must come into this world. Isn't that what Casey said? You have to make it possible. If you don't make it, it'll never come. So it is you who must set the stage of receptivity for a Christ-realized individual to flow. The woman is setting the stage in her consciousness to be able to receive, let alone recognize. When she touches the garment of Jesus, she's made whole. But a strange conversation occurs just at that time. The Master said, "Someone has touched me." According to the King James Version, that was the word they translate touch. The newer editions or newer translations, they use the word push. Well, we will see where push and touch have different meanings and different responses in the science of the soul. Peter replied and said, "Master, everyone is touching you." In the new editions, we can say, "Master, everyone is pushing against you." But then the Master replies, "No, power has gone out of me." The newer editions of different translators say, "Virtue has gone out of me." It's a big difference when you're looking in terms of the science of the soul. What really goes out and what is supposed to go out. The Christ intelligence is the creative force field. We're saying force field, present and directing the structure of creation. So if the man who has realized comprehends its mechanics, if he was saying virtue, then this would be incorrect. If he's saying power, then he is correct. Power went out of him. But to show that he knew that power went out of him, because he's identified, he's not merely wearing a garment by conscious association. He's identified with the garment by the power relationship of the structure of matter within his being. This is what the man is saying. Power went out. You have drawn from my source of relationship by setting up the necessary conditions of the mind. So he looks around. And by looking around, he points out the culprit. Now, if he did not do that, we could say virtue really went out of the man. And by a lucky stroke of awareness, he picked up that woman's thought waves and helped her. He identified the woman and he said to her, "Your faith have made thee whole." Your alignment of consciousness to the reality of your being from within yourself made it possible for these two force fields to meet under the desired nature of yourself. If you did not crave for a healing and set up this alliance in your mind, you could not bring about this release from within me to you, or from within your own makeup, the necessary experience that is occurring now. You have to make this association inside. She then recognized, beyond all doubt, Christ's consciousness flowing through a realized man. Within us, when we are striving to recognize Christ's consciousness in ourselves, we can do this by setting up the right mental relationships. The moment you begin to do that, many things occur in your life. You begin to see such things like some of your desires materializing in a strange way. I know many people who can vouch for that. They have thought and wanted many things when they were young. And the moment they began to recognize the intimacy of consciousness in matter with themselves, their desires began to crystallize in miraculous ways. A friend of mine told me this one time. He had a fountain pen and he refused to buy one, and regardless of where he went, the pen would leak. But he would still use it. He was a minister. But he would not buy another pen because waste not, want not. He's a very frugal man. But he says, if the Christ is so marvelous in all things, the Christ will provide me a pen. He went on a tour to Europe. On his way back home to America, all the gifts that were given to him by all the places he visited was a Parker fountain pen. Strange. Everywhere, no one knew what he wanted, but they all brought him a Parker fountain pen. This is the same like the one he was writing with. Somebody took pity on him, you may say, or is the creative intelligence working to crystallize from within? We have this happening to us in many ways, in simple things around us every day. You go out and you're in a mental quandary, what to do about your life. You set up the necessary desire pattern inside for some guidance. And you may say to yourself, I better play by ear. So you're on the alert for guidance. You run into people, and if you're conscious, that's making the necessary preparation. Before the day is over, some individual seems to come along and give you some information to go where you're supposed to go. And then you thank God. Well, you know, if you tell your wife or your husband, today I met such and such a person and she gave me the answer what I was looking for. Not fully realizing that the person is only the focal point for the creative intelligent force, which is already locked up in you, pulling back to bring it about into manifestation. Just as much as you send out love to a plant and it will respond, and you need an instrument to give you some validity of its response, think of it on the basis of human beings to human beings. How faster, how fantastic the time cycle can be diminished. You can actually diminish the time lapse among human beings to bring about an experience in the Christ consciousness. The Christ consciousness can now be recognized not as a human being, but as the creative force field that works through human beings. God is meeting you now on a personal level. Here, for the first time, you are seeing this divine law not as a figment of imagination or some illusionary world, but as a factual exposure to divine life in action. The more love you seem to emit towards it, or to emit to another human being, the faster this crystallization comes about. If you set up the attitude of the day is that I love all men and I'm going out, and I may have many business problems, where do I turn? The creative intelligence is there locked up as the Christ principle in all men. But your love, setting it up for receptivity, triggers this in motion and brings this crystallization. Before you know it, you are drawn, or they are drawn, into your sphere of existence to have a release or a confrontation or an experience of crystallization or materialization. In the East, we say devotion to God via the personal form enhances the Christ principle or the Krishna consciousness. Well, we got lots of people shouting Krishna consciousness. And then on this side of the Atlantic or the Pacific, we got lots of us shouting Christ consciousness. And the two are clashing each other's heads, you know, banging away at each other. That is not the true comprehension of the Christ consciousness. Where the true comprehension of the Christ consciousness comes in is our moment-to-moment participation with the desire action of the mechanism in relation to others around us. We cannot live without desire. We cannot suddenly cut off all desire. Yet every desire must have an action to be fulfilled or be eliminated. If you have a desire for a cigarette, it will be fulfilled. If you have a desire to get rid of it, it will be eliminated. So the desire action within the frame of your consciousness working can now draw upon the collective force field of all around you to release you or elevate you instantaneously. You have to trust it now. Just as much as the woman trusted that if she only touched the garment, not the man's body, the physical garment that he wore, to bring about this release, we have to trust now in the creative intelligence inherent in the structure of matter around us to bring about the crystallization of thoughts as a reality for the first time. Don't look at the world around you in some form of disgust, as to say it's immaterial or material. Nothing is immaterial, or nothing here in this world is material in the true sense of the word. In the true sense of the word, everything here is a crystallization of a cosmic desire. Otherwise, we would not be here in the first place. God had to desire to make a creation. He had to set it into action. And the action is the end result we see. And that end result is us when we look back at it. Now, when we accept the responsibility of trying to unite to it back on a personal level, then we will have the experiences of facing God in the levels of descent. The Eastern people call it Avatara. The Western scriptures call it Emmanuel, the God in man. As we prepare the mind to make this possible confrontation of God on a personal level, then we will be able to experience more and more of the Christ consciousness within ourselves in time reduction experiences, which you call instantaneous. One wise man said, the greater the realization of the individual, that is to say, the greater the comprehension of a human being about his self and his environment, the greater his impact or control over the environment. You realize what is happening? If you are aware of yourself more and more, leaving the primitive sense of awareness in terms of this is a tree, and realizing a tree now is no longer a tree, but it's energy, and energy is consciousness. Once you have this sudden altered attitude to this object for the first time, and start to see it in the whole perspective, and to realize that your thoughts are triggering and causing some crystallization to occur, you will experience Christ's awareness. Among the Indians on the reservations, there is a particular ritual they have when there is no rain. Now, we all know what rain is. It's not beautiful, dirty water that falls from the polluted skies. All right. But it's there in the clouds, and then it comes down. On a day when there is no clouds, remember, a day where there is no clouds, these Indians get together and try to send up prayer thoughts for the release of rain on the earth. Now this is not imagination. This is a very, very powerful science at work. Those people who really pray for that rain, many of them are very, very devoted to a higher awareness. And they will start praying. And before their prayers are almost complete, out of that clear blue sky, you may need an umbrella to cover your head before you get flushed out. Rain comes down. Now, one may say, well, gee whiz, if you're so great and can pray any time to get rain, why the heck we got to have bad crops? Why should there be drought in certain areas? We can't just take this group of people on a bus or a plane and put them over here, pray, go around and do the next prayer. Well, all right. This is a sort of mass producing it. We have broken the true contact for the use of the Christ intelligence. I said before, we cannot do that type of consciousness. There must be a desire within the framework of the being. And when this desire is set up and need is brought into focus, then it will crystallize. To earth and pray and let water fall from the heavens, and then suddenly, because there's a drought over there or there's none falling there and nobody's asking for it, you take a group of people and take them over the other side and pray for them and then release it there, and then you take it and go someplace else. You're actually violating this principle. If we look at the guidelines of the realized masters who have recognized this Christ intelligence, we will see they do not bring about the manifestation or the crystallization of the desires unless there is that basic connection with them and the individual involved. After Jesus turned water into wine to satisfy his mother, who in turn was trying to satisfy the desires of her kinfolk, he did not go on to be the number one winemaker. You see, there is what we're looking at. He did the act, he recognized the reality of his Christ awareness, his Christ consciousness, and brought it into focus, their desire, satisfied their desire, and left. Equally true, any other realized individual, any one of us in this room that can relate to this consciousness, the moment we can relate to this Christ consciousness within ourselves and cause a desire to crystallize, we will see that you have to be asked on certain levels for it to crystallize. Otherwise, you will run into dead ends, blind alleys. When you ask an individual to tune in on that creative intelligence and bring about a result in your life, there must be some bond, some unfinished commitment, some lesson, some behavioral release causing it or occurring within you to have it as an experience. Each one would like to see more wine made without effort. And everyone would all of a sudden want, how can I do it? But ask yourself, making more wine without any effort, and for whose benefit? You see, you can make a mess of this creative force field for the first time. If you're going into winemaking for a material profit by selling it, then you're wasting your time. Why not create the whole ocean into one big wine vat? You see, if you want to dole it out in terms of dollars and cents, then what are you really craving? Are you craving dollars and cents? Are you craving the show of being capable of converting water into wine? This is the integrity of the thing. To be able to recognize that when you are in that state, how to apply it for the benefit of those that need it. We cannot force Christ awareness upon people. We cannot make their misery or their trials less than they are willing to turn it loose. They must make the trials and the tribulations a part of their life. Jesus said it. Take up your cross and follow me. It is essential that we do work out some of these problems. But at the same time, it's essential for us to recognize the God in man capable of crystallizing a desire and freeing us from the implications of those desires. That will make us more conscious of our own inner divinity. Now, in the East, they made a painting of the man Gopal, who they called the Krishna of India at the time, a Christ-realized man. And it's a peculiar thing that they paint his entire body blue. There has never been any painting out of India that depicted Krishna other than blue. Now, isn't that strange? Now, how we come down to Jesus now? If they were going to paint Master Jesus, they'll paint him blue too. They'll take this Jewish figure and paint it in blue and said, this is the Jewish Christ. To a person looking at it, that's a disfigurement. He's a Jewish man, he's Caucasian. To them, that's unimportant, it's blue. Then you ask yourself, why do they paint it blue? What does the blue represent? In creation, in the structure of light, there are many colors. The most predominant color outside of white is blue. Now, they paint Krishna blue, the whole body, to represent this Christ intelligence in matter. If we were to look to the heavens, which we do when we raise our hands or our eyes to God, which is the most predominant color you see? Blue. Has anyone ever penetrated with his eyes into the infinity of blue? You can look for long hours and still never go out to the end of where the blue is. And if you travel in space, you'll get the queer feeling that there is no blue there. Huh? Which astronaut says that when he's traveling in space outside is blue? Everyone came back and said it's total darkness out there. How did this total darkness suddenly disappear while they're in space moving, or when we're on the earth looking at it, seeing it as blue? Then we have a beautiful answer for it. Because the ocean is blue, therefore the sky is blue. Yeah. But the rocks in the ocean aren't blue either. How, let me say, the sun diffuses, therefore the sky is blue. How does the sky suddenly get the blueness? and when the astronaut is in space, the blueness disappears and turns black. The Hindus have said that because the creative intelligence or the divine artist is flowing through creation, and since blue appears to be the predominant color, that blue is the radiant form of the Christ intelligence. Now, anyone having an experience inside with any spiritual person will see the radiant form as blue. Now, in the brain we have light, and the light has three colors, gold, blue, and white. And the most predominant color inside is blue. This blue, once you lock into it, for the first time your consciousness is vibrating in all things. That is the level we call consciousness acting on consciousness. You begin to sense.
Too close?
Too far. Okay. My watch. All right. If the Lord wants to make the place in a big room.
You have too much power.
But that sound is the sound of the audible life current. You don't recognize it. God is consciousness, light, and sound passing through this human mechanism in a total level. When we lock into it, we can hear it, we can see it, and we can be aware of it, of the consciousness acting on the consciousness. We must realize that when we use the term Christ, we are not talking of a man. We are talking of the descent of the Spirit into the man. Now, to see it in that radiant form within, blue is the obvious color that comes around it. Anyone who has had any inexperience will tell you the Christ, the man Jesus, appears in a blue light surrounding his body. When we try to understand the Christ consciousness at our level, which is the level we want to understand it and use it, it becomes important to understand a particular function of this country. In this country, we have a saying, any man can become the president of the United States. The presidency is an office. The man in that office is the president. All right. The power vested in that office is accepted to be the highest power released to a single individual. If he signs into effect a law, the nation is supposed to obey it. We are looking at the divine principle working now in terms of the Christ. The Christ intelligence in vibratory creation is like the cosmic presidency of this world. And any man can become Christ realized and function from that level. Each one of us are potentially Christ realized when we are awakened. Each one of us has this potential. Each one of us then can be elected president of the United States. Each one of us can become Christ realized. This is something that you can become. Now, If Mr. Kennedy signs into effect a law, or Mr. Lincoln signs a law into effect, or Mr. Nixon signs a law into effect, or let's say Mr. Washington, these three men are no different in terms of the presidency as far as their power to act from that office. But you cannot say to yourself that Washington is less important than Kennedy, or less important than Abraham Lincoln, or less important than Mr. Nixon. The four men do not have the same identical problems to face, the same relationships to face, or associations to face. They all differ. Yet each one, the moment they put their signature to some document, it is ratified and accepted as legal. The same thing is true of all the Christ-realized men that walk this earth. Buddha is no different than Jesus, and Jesus is no different than Govinda or Gopal, and Gopal is no different than Rama or any of the other great teachers that came on this earth. They are in their particular time, their particular sphere of actions, conditions, people, and they had to work it out. Now, Jesus died on a cross. Krishna was poisoned. Buddha was poisoned. Interesting that these men did not die normal deaths in their beds. The Christ consciousness does not necessarily perform miracles, but this is one of its side products. When you're in office, like the president in the country, you can either get involved in a war, or you may never get involved in the war. There are presidents who had no chance to ever get involved with a war, and there are presidents who got involved with wars. Equally true, the Christ-realized man may never get involved with any action pertaining to violence, or he may get involved with actions pertaining to violence. We come to realize he may neither have to perform a miracle, or he may have to perform miracles. The same is true. So if we look at the Christ-realized man, and we're looking to recognize it in the human being, the things we don't look for is the miracles. We don't look for the superiority of the intellect. We don't look for the difference in philosophies. We look for the central message of all of them, and the central behavior of all of them. The central message of the Christ-realized man is love and peace. The central behavior of the Christ-realized man is to crystallize your thoughts for you, if you have a need. Many great masters, when the students came to them with their desires, were crystallized for them in their own life for them. And they did not have to go out and tell the world that this occurred in them. They were even cautioned not to go and say anything. You remember in the life of Jesus, the man who was healed from leprosy, he was even cautioned not to go and expose or say anything. They do not want a show, and they may even heal us without a show. They can lift our minds up into a state of peace. They can heal us without even reaching out and touching us, strictly because we have a desire that has to be crystallized. third thing in recognizing the Christ-realized man, and to recognize you are entering that state yourself. How to recognize you are entering the Christ-conscious state in yourself. And that is the peace you feel throughout the body when you generate love to your fellow man, and how long it remains with you. The peace you feel when you generate love for your fellow man, and how long it remains with you. If you send love out to someone and feel the inner peace, how long that peace remains with you in the waking state, not in the sleep state, in the waking state, you are now tapping in on your Christ consciousness. Because you are going to affect the environment, and you're going to affect your fellow men. Jesus put it another way. He said, as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become sons of God. The peace I give, the world don't give. And if you cut out the tongues of men of peace, the stones themselves will shout peace. Christ consciousness can best be experienced and realized on a conscious level by the sustained peace within 24 hours and 7 days a week, 365 days a year, you know you have arrived. Now, your mere beingness can create miracles, it can crystallize desires. And we see that in the case of Peter. Peter was a very hard man at times. He was not 100% peaceful. He was trying to get to that peaceful state. There might be hours when the peace was gone from him, and there might be hours when he was sustaining the peace. And we see, in a peculiar situation, he was standing in the room where Paul was lecturing, and his peace went away from him all of a sudden. He felt envious of Paul. He walked out of the room, trying to regain his composure of peace again, and he passed a blind man, and the blind man said to him, "Heal me." He paid no attention to the blind man. Yet, when he regained his composure and returned back, his shadow fell on the man. He didn't even know his shadow was falling on the man. And the man regained his sight. Do you understand what I'm talking now? How the Christ consciousness is a collective principle in the whole of the creative force field working through us. And when we relate to it, it will begin to make an impression on the environment around us. It is not the man Jesus. The next in line to the presidency is the vice presidency. This individual has the same functions when the president is absent that he can step in and perform. Yet he may not be the competent individual, he may not be elected as yet into the presidency, but he has to be acquainted with the functions of that office. Equally true, when we are striving to become aware of the Christ intelligence in the whole force field around us, we may not be living completely at an ethical level for it to occur 100% in us. But nevertheless, whatever percent this force field is working through us, this is to encourage us to move towards that total involvement, that total surrender with it. When we make that total surrender, then it flows 100%. So, to finalize the recognition of the Christ consciousness in all things, look for the peace that you feel in a conscious state all the time. Because in that state, even your mere shadow can do many things. You can walk through a garden and you can affect the plants. You can come close to a sick squirrel and just radiate peace to it, and the squirrel will be gaining its strength back. Or a sick possum. So it's the love that you are feeling inside manifesting as a peace state. Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
Some people have some questions they want to ask. There was one gentleman who's going to ask a question.
I asked you in the break if a person could use another individual that had progressed ahead to help direct the force so that they could realize the Christ in their cells.
Both. You can do it by yourself, it will take you a long time, and by the grace of another who is in that state, he can help you to recognize it faster. Alright, a candle can't light itself, it takes another lit candle to light it up. An egg can't become a chicken unless a mother hen sits in it. But the fruit on a tree grows gradually, and then one day the tree weans itself from the fruit. Or wean the fruit from the tree. So there we see the tree is growing by itself, the fruit is growing by itself, but then within the tree this weaning process occurs. The candle can't light itself, and the chicken can't come out of the egg by itself. So we need both. We need aid of the inherent power within to make the fruit come into fruition and let the tree dispense of it, just as much we need the heat of the hen sitting on the egg to bring out the chicken, or someone lifting a lit candle to light another one. We need both. So one alone is insufficient. This reason Master Jesus came to his disciples. Otherwise they by themselves would take a long time to suddenly come into realization. By his aid, these disciples were able to gain the realization. Yes.
I'm curious, how can you tell, how did the Master Jesus choose the disciples, the 12?
He said, "You have not chosen me, I have chosen you." All right. His awareness of the Christ intelligence within himself radiated out to those who were bordering on that particular ability, but were incapable of bringing it to fruition. So there is a saying in your scriptures, the shepherd knows its sheep, and the sheep knows its shepherd. There is a sense of knowingness that occurs between an individual and the master. When Jesus came down from the mountain after he was tempted for the 40 days and 40 nights, he was passing in front of the River Jordan. And John said, "There goeth your master." Now, a whole host of people were sitting there around the Jordan listening to John the Baptist. Now, John the Baptist said, "There goeth your master." It said that three men got up and followed Jesus. But he never looked around and said, "Hi, I'm glad you recognize me." The man who pointed out these men's teacher was a man who was aware too, because Jesus went to that man to be baptized by him. And imagine when they met what they said to each other. "You baptize me? No, you baptize me. No, you baptize me? No, you baptize me." Two grown-up individuals arguing who should throw water in each other's head. Sounds kind of games. But Jesus made a remark that was very significant. "Suffer it to be so, for this is the way of righteousness." There is a link of recognition occurring between the two men on consciousness within themselves. So John went ahead and performed the ritual. But John was also saying to the men around the River Jordan, "There goeth your master." And it's noted that three men got up and followed him. And he went about selecting the rest, gathering him to him the spiritual men that he needed. Now, we only know or would relate to these 12 men because they were appearing to be what you call renunciates, not involved with the worldly affairs of life. But this is not true in a spiritual life. The spiritual life is both householder and renunciate. And Jesus had many householder disciples, far more in elevation than those that were following him. But they were not recorded or appear to have been significant in the writings of the life of Jesus. Yet their very life carried many great spiritual truths. In the life of Lazarus, he was a disciple, a householder disciple, a very unusual disciple, in the sense that he was relieved of a karmic condition called attachment. There were two Lazaruses, a rich one and a poor one. The poor one was the one that had all the diseases. The rich one is the one that Jesus stayed at his house, that had two sisters. But that one was subject to attachment. He could not break loose from it. So the master left his home. And when he left his home, they said a strange illness came upon Lazarus. And then when he was told that Lazarus was ill, he paid no attention, he kept on going. And finally he was told by a message that Lazarus is dead. Then he makes a tremendous remark and says, "This is not a debt unto the debt." Indicating he knew very well the principles of life control. Because there are many levels of debt. Yet he went back. And when the sisters came, you can imagine two householder sisters, what they'll be saying in their minds before they meet the teacher. "Boy, you stayed at our house and ate all our food, and this is the way you repay us? You wouldn't even come when we send a message to you?" I know I would. But they suppressed all these, and this, in a very pleasant way they said, "Master, if you were here, our brother wouldn't be fearing thus." It's a strange way you tell someone, not relating, and at the same time you're communicating subtle thought patterns. The master could read their minds very well, but then he teaches them another lesson in disciplehood. He says, "Where is the body?" "But master, he's dead. He's been dead 3 days. "Where is the grave?" "Master, he's buried for 3 days." He's going to pull them out now. He's putting them through the ropes. So he goes to the grave and he makes a big statement, "Lazarus, come forth," in a loud voice. But then he says again, "Father, I did not have to say it in a loud voice, only because of the people around." If you understand the subtle play between a disciple and a guru or a teacher, then we know what is going on in this principle of the Christ consciousness in man. Jesus was fully Christ realized, but he was trying to make these disciples awaken to their own Christ consciousness. So he had to put them through the paces to get them to wake up to it. So when Lazarus came out, Lazarus was a changed man. He opened his home to many that were there for the first time. And you might say, according to Paul, this was our first humanitarian or philanthropist. He became a very charitable man. You know, Paul says, of all the three virtues, which is the most important? Charity. Lazarus might not have had the opportunity in a lifetime to be charitable until he was put to the test of death. These subtle references in many writings indicate what is happening. Yet other disciples that live with Jesus, that are recorded, perform many miracles. But that doesn't say that those other disciples in their household chores were not capable of performing miracles. They were. But we're not judging the spiritual life by the miracle. A blow on the head and at the end of your ability to perform miracles. It's your peace that passes all understanding that permeates your body to the grave and beyond the grave. This is the evidence of spirituality. The peace I give, the world don't give. That's what he's talking about. If we have that in us, these cells are transformed, because these cells will throw off the ability to break down after death. This is what is meant by when this body throws off corruption and takes on non-corruption. When the disciple accepts the Christ in himself, he would not have to overcome the breakdown of the cells. It's a natural law, just as much as a caterpillar becomes a butterfly. It's natural for us to arrive at that state once we recognize it. Okay. No more questions? Yes.
Christ consciousness can be raised in this kind of living experience of Christians.
right? They were only fulfilling the discipline of their teacher, who said to them while he was in the body, "When two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst." They were performing group meditation or group participation. But with what? Was it the Christ consciousness or something else? Remember, he said, "I go unto the Father, but I send you the Holy Comforter, and he will remind you of all these things in my name." The Holy Spirit descending upon these people reassured these people that they were still locked into the Christ consciousness within themselves. And unless they had some tangible experience of the Holy Comforter that gave them that assurance, they would have fallen apart. We would fall apart too if we have no assurance of these particular abilities that the Christ is with us. Well, we don't need the abilities to make the assurance, because he told his disciples when he came back from the grave, "Blessed are they who do not see and believe, than they who see and believe." The assurance must come from a surrender of devotion within yourself to the Christ, working within all things. This devotion is greater. This devotion is the true strength you're looking for, because a blow on the head would not deprive you of that devotion, or any injury would not deprive you of that devotion. Whereas the gifts of the Spirit can be suddenly taken away by any injury to the physical mechanism. You see? So if they get together and pray, it is good. Don't get me wrong, it's good. They need it, we all need it. We should get together and pray and meditate. This makes the way passable now for the Christ to come back through us. And the being will come down. He may not necessarily be a Jew the next time, or a Chinaman, or a Hindu. You don't know what nationality he may pick now. And he may not necessarily wear a robe with beard, or he may not wear an Ivy League suit and carry an attaché case. We don't know what form the being is going to take now to crystallize. But nevertheless, if we make it possible for this consciousness to come down, we can have that experience. He can materialize in our realm. He can actually be among us to satisfy us. But don't think that the Christ realized man, Jesus, his resurrected body is somewhere in Never Never Land. It's here with us. It's always been with us. The only difference between his body and yours is that your body casts a shadow and leaves a footprint. His body is flesh and blood like yours and mine, but it don't cast no shadow and leave no footprint. And it does not need to eat food like you and I, because it has mastered the five senses. It absorbs pure light through the medulla. So, what can be more thrilling, even in a Pentecostal movement, to suddenly have the Master Jesus bring out his resurrected body and stand up in the midst? Like the night when he appeared to the people up in the upper room, the disciples. You understand? That is more thrilling, because you have a tangible contact now. The holy gift of the Spirit to perform or talk in tongues, don't get me wrong, they are good. But the actual experience of the Christ, Jesus, the man who was realized as Christ, standing there, giving a confirmation of that state. All other great teachers who were realized, their disciples saw them after that. They've had the experience. We may not have the books in this part of the world to confirm it, because it's written in other languages. Yet anyone who has studied the Oriental religions and know anything about the relationship between the master and the disciple, on what basis that relationship is based on, they know that their master appears to them even after death and gives them an experience of that state of beingness that we should strive for. That is the Christ state we are striving for, where this body is no longer breaking down. Since there are no, yes?
Could you define again intuition for some of the people that have not been adopted?
Intuition is an ability to know independent of the senses. It is your true self. That part of you that knows independent of the senses. Now, if you know anything or perceive anything in your environment, you have to use the five senses. And then to make sure that you're not losing your marbles, you want to have some tangible, factual evidence to satisfy your five senses. So you use logic. Yet, if you want to transcend the limitation of the wall, you have to extend the five senses via equipment, X-ray, telescope, radar, all utilizing energy. Yet your five senses uses energy. Intuition is using an accelerated state of that energy now for the first time, independent of the contact point of limitation. So when a person says they are clairvoyant, that is only one aspect of that intuitive level working through them on the vision spectrum, that they may see now into space and time events occurring. Yet if they are aware without relying on clairvoyance, then they are aware at all time, because that is what cosmic consciousness is, omnidirectional awareness. There is no limitation to that. Yes?
Is self-realization a process where a separate individual consciousness recognizes an omnipresent, omnidirectional consciousness existing and flowing through him, but that the two are separate? Or is it that the self-realization process is that one realizes that he is the same as that omnidirectional, omnipresent consciousness?
I'll give you an example. There is one moon in the sky, and you have a dozen different glasses of water of different sizes and colors and different quantities of water. And if you see a dozen reflections in the dozen glasses, how many moons do you have? Why you come to the conclusion you had one moon? So you see, realization is what? Extension of your awareness to the source of being. Therefore, you and the Father are one. The knowledge of yourself. To see you is to see the Father. To see the image in the glass of water is to see the moon that is responsible for the image. Yet that doesn't say there are 12 moons. There are 12 expressions of the one moon. There are 40 or 60 or 80 people in this room. That doesn't say there are 60 or 80 self-realized or 60 or 80 Christ consciousness. It's one Christ consciousness passing through all of us. It's one God self passing through all of us. It's like the current in this room. The current in this room is already preset by the wiring and the power station that connects to this building. Now, the main switch downstairs is the contact point. And if the people in this building don't pay their bills, they'll cut it off. And if they don't make a contract with them, they can't get any. So you know, you recognize karma pretty fast. You don't pay your bills, the Lord will take care of you pretty fast. And you got a contract with him to live in this world plane, because that's where we come to live in, as a tenant in the body. The wires are the nerves, they're all preset. Your nose is not over here, and your lips are not up here. They're all preset shaped. The current is hooked into you at the medulla. Now, you have a switch, just like that switch on the wall, to turn off and on this power or plug in electrical equipment, but you don't go and pull the main switch to turn it off and spoil all the food in the refrigerator. So this so-called ability to play around with the switch is your pituitary gland. You play around with it as much as you want and make movements. But no one would trust you to play around with your heart or your lungs or your kidneys. The creative intelligence would not suddenly turn over power to your conscious mind to switch it on or off. If you get a shock or some bad news and your conscious mind gets rattled, your heart would quiver and you would not know what to do, to send more blood or less blood, or to stop it, or stop breathing, or slow down your breathing, because it starts quivering too fast. And the survival mechanism would have to bring about a dictatorial command on your mechanism to slow down. It may put you in a state of a coma, or put you into a state of unconsciousness, or do something to you to make you realize that you consciously don't control it. Now, when you consciously control it from an ethical level, then you can say, like the Master said, "No man take my life from me. I have the power to lay down, I have the power to pick it up." Until that time, we don't have the power to lay down, we don't have the power to pick it up.
Yes.
The search for realization begins in total frustration. If you weren't frustrated, you would not be searching. In the Eastern country, they say when a student is ready, a master will be there. The question is, what constitutes readiness in a student for a master, and what is the master supposed to do? The student cannot say he's ready because he's read books. He cannot say he's ready because he loves God so great that God should suddenly come and give him knowledge. The student cannot say that he's been more holy than thou or any other individual. He's been obeying all the rules of the game, and suddenly now he's ready for the grace of some realized individual. These would be incomplete, incorrect forms of readiness. Because the term master means one who has mastered himself and therefore have no frustrations. He is totally free. For the first time, he's a free man, lord of himself. He has freedom, therefore he doesn't have frustration. And having this freedom, he can lead you now, who has frustration and would be the very measuring stick of your readiness. When you are ready and you are frustrated and you have all the information in front of you, you can't make it work, then you do like what they stick those tags on the wall. When everything else fails, follow instructions. And that's what a disciple becomes. He follows the instructions of someone who has mastered the behavior patterns of his nature for the first time. That's why they call him a disciple. He is now going to follow instructions. What type of instructions should he follow? We see from every teacher of truth, the instructions are the same. Ethical laws of how to behave, leading towards an inner peace, a profound transformation of the cellular structure. There is no conflict in none of the teachings of the truth concerning the life of the disciple and the teacher. They're all saying the same thing. So, readiness of a disciple is total frustration. Ask yourself, why did Jesus, a great man, went to a man like John the Baptist, who wasn't supposed to be any greater than Jesus, and ask him to throw water in his head? Do you know that scenery? That particular incident in Jesus' life? He was a great man. All of a sudden, he decides to go to someone who has no qualifications as far as just being some derelict in the wilderness shouting, "Confess, confess, prepare you the way." So imagine walking up to a man like that and saying, "Baptize me." The other guy says, "No, you baptize me." He says, "No, you baptize me. No, you baptize me." A tug of war of wits. But he says, "Suffer it to be so. For this is the way of righteousness." Now the word baptism means initiation. That's what it means. It does not have to do with a child being blessed in the church. That came years after when they did not know what to do with the children who were going to be slaughtered by the various governments at that time because the parents were being rounded up and herded into the arena to be eaten up by lions or something, and many of the children were abandoned and they were shot. So they had to come to some decision in their minds that these children had need of some type of expiation for thought patterns that they might incur or may not incur. So they came to that conclusion that we should baptize children. So the adult, after a while, was no longer necessary to be baptized. It became only children, so a long lineage of children being baptized today. What the true thing involved at baptism, you realize that at baptism there's such a covenant as godparents. Why did he use the term godparent? A godparent is only that individual who will make it possible for that child to recognize God. But now when you take it in the ritual life of the church, and don't confuse churchianity with Christianity. Christianity has nothing to do with churchianity. In the ritual life of the church, the godparent pledges when the child reaches 13 years of age, he'll come for confirmation. In the mystic life, the godparent is the guru or the master. Jesus was the godparent of his 12 disciples. He was a parent unto them. He made the way clear for them to show them how to live an ethical life. and he first going to John to be baptized or initiated had to open the road in consciousness. So when those came who gathered around him, he was able to lift them up. So initiation is not something you can buy. It's a gift. That's why he said to his disciples, "You have not chosen me, I have chosen you." A master gives us this as a gift because that is what it's all for. It is to contact you or connect you back to your higher self. So to say that one is searching for it or hearing about it, let us put it this way. If you weren't ready for it, you would never hear of it. And even when the day that it's available for you to have it, and the Lord don't want you to be there, come hell or high water, you'll never make it. And if he wants you to have it, come hail or rainstorm or thunder, you will be at that door where that initiation is being given as a gift. This is how it works. In other words, it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with your higher consciousness, the Christ in you, pulling you back through a certain road inward. So when the time comes, if you're going to have this particular experience, no matter what you do, you will be there or you would not be there. It's as simple as that. Okay. I'll let you folks go home. I know you want to go home. Gosh.